Thursday, August 15th. The Germans say bad weather has forced them to slacken air activity against Great Britain today. And in Great Britain, troops and civilians continue to comb the countrysides for German parachute soldiers. None have been found, but Berlin quarters insist they have landed. In Africa, Italian and British armies are fighting an important battle, and the British fleet is reported to have left for an attack on Italian ports at Eritrea. Now for the report of Larry Lesueur in the British capital. Go ahead, London.
This is London at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon on August 15th. August 15th, the day of Hitler's appointed entry into London. He reportedly named this day to his party leaders in Germany when Paris fell. But the German chancellor seems merely to have sent a few representatives over to this island. Yesterday, for the first time, church bells rang in warning of parachute troop landings. After 59 German parachutes had been found at various points in England and Scotland. Their German owners have not yet been found, and until they are,
there is no concrete evidence that these large white silk parachutes actually landed German sabotage experts in Britain. No footprints were visible near the fallen parachutes. But of course, the lush greenness of England doesn't make for good tracking.
During last night and early today, German planes were over this country in small numbers. One of them was shot down. The mass air attacks on England were decidedly slackened yesterday. 26 German planes were knocked down by the Royal Air Force, it's officially stated,
while Britain lost only 4 of her fighters.
Airfields in England were again attacked yesterday. In other German campaigns, these raids on aerodromes have always been a forerunner of an invasion. Responsible persons here believe that the next 10 days may be the turning point of the war. Preparations are being made here for heavier and heavier air attacks. As I walked to the studio this morning, after a few days' absence from London, I was really amazed by the number of brick air raid shelters which have been erected in the middle of some of the busiest streets here. The armed British merchant cruiser Transylvania, 16,900 tons, was sunk by a U-boat torpedo in the Atlantic. The loss of this ship was announced by the Admiralty in the early hours of this morning. Some 300 officers and men were landed at a West Coast port.
The death roll is figured to be about 30 or 40.
Transylvania was a well-known luxury liner before the war.
She was built in 1925.
A number of her lifeboats are still adrift in the rough Atlantic. Royal Air Force planes were active over Germany and her conquered territories last night. My colleagues who were staying at Dover on the southeast coast told me that the glow of a big fire could be seen across the channel in France all through the night. The red glow lit up the sky at a point between Calais and Le Havre. At the same time, heavy explosions could be heard for a whole hour this morning from across the channel, and bright flashes could be seen from the hotel windows at Dover. We are told today that the Royal Air Force planes in the Middle East have destroyed 170 planes, Italian ones, while the loss to the RAF has been only 18 machines, an advantage to Britain of 10 to 1. The Air Ministry in London is very pleased over this showing, and it is confident that if British fighter pilots can maintain an average of 4-1 against the German Air Force
and the Italian,
Britain will then be in command of the air. This sounds a rather hard task. However, considering yesterday's claimed score of 6 German planes to every British fighter shot down, the British pilots are not having much trouble in maintaining the hoped-for average. But it is to be remembered that much of this battle for Britain is now being fought in the factories and on the drawing boards of both Germany and Britain, where new air weapons are being prepared. Britain has not seen fit yet to use her much-vaunted Bolton-Fall Defiant fighters, even against Germany's newest fighter bomber, the Messerschmitt Jaguar, which has come over this country so frequently during the past week. David Lowe, the world-famous cartoonist of London's Evening Standard, today has pictured a triumphal arch in the midst of London. Above is a banner emblazoning the words, August 15th, welcome to our distinguished visitors. Beneath the arch are 4 tough-looking British soldiers.
In the muzzles of their Tommy guns are sheaves of lilies.
But Hitler has not arrived. We return you now to CBS in New York.
That was Larry Lesueur reporting from London. And here is a dispatch from London we have just received. A great fire burning on the French coast reminded watchers on this side of the channel during the night that while Britons were talking imperturbably the punishment German aviators visited on them, their own air force was handing out punishment to the Germans in their own and occupied territories and to Italy. And now, from Berlin, we take you to Rome, We beg your pardon, ladies and gentlemen. We take you now to Berlin for the report of Edwin Hartridge. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin. There is no reference to be found in the German papers about stories emanating from London that parachutists are believed to have landed in several places in England. But there is an interesting item that was broadcast this morning in the German shortwave news programs directed towards Great Britain. The source of this news is said to be Stockholm. And the German radio reports that parachutists were observed at several points in the neighborhood of Birmingham on Tuesday night. I will quote the German news broadcast. Eyewitnesses were reported to have seen men come down by parachutes, and extensive searches are now being conducted. The equipment of a German parachute has been handed over to the police. This was found in a meadow near Brownwich Castle in the neighborhood of Birmingham. And continuing, this report told English listeners, quote, "These observations are being hushed up because the authorities are hoping to capture the alleged parachutists before the incidents could become more widely known." Then the radio news broadcast also stated, quote, "Similar occurrences were reported from Manchester. A leather satchel was fished out of the Manchester ship canal. In it were tools, provisions, notes, and instructions for parachutists. The police are busy trying to locate the owner." End of quote. Well, that is the important part of this German news broadcast about parachutists reported to have landed in England. It is interesting that this indirect report is broadcast on the English shortwave program directed towards Great Britain, and that this same report does not appear in the Berlin papers. I saw German parachutists in action when Holland was invaded. And these reports of parachutists over England, if such reports are true, do not exactly jibe with the tactics of the German parachutists as they went into action during the Dutch invasion. For their parachute troops dropped in groups from low-flying planes, and their job was to seize and hold important bridges, cut other lines of communications, and cause disruption behind the defending forces. But the reports of isolated parachutists dropping at various spots throughout England have a psychological value as regards the effect on civilian morale. Here in Berlin, there is little news of aerial or naval activity. Yesterday's score of the fights over England in the Channel were 22 British planes shot down while 5 German planes were lost, according to the statement issued by the High Command here. Berlin papers are giving a big play to the report of Colonel Knox, the United States Secretary of Navy, has said that it is possible that Great Britain cannot defend herself after another 2 months. Also the statement of Colonel Knox that America does not know the true figure of British aviation and shipping losses. The Boston Zeitung headlines this story with a sentence, quote, "Sensational declaration in the United States," unquote. Hermann Göring has his picture in all the papers this morning, dressed in his new uniform as Reichsmarshal of Germany. It is a new and resplendent addition to his already famous wardrobe of uniforms. As Reichsmarshal, Göring will now wear a light silver-gray uniform with a larger baton than he formerly carried as Marshal. And there is another interesting photo of a letter signed by Pierre Laval, now Vice President of the Council of Ministers of France. For his official stationery carries the new seal of the Pétain government of France, which is used only by Marshal Pétain and Pierre Laval. No longer is the government of France known as the French Republic, but merely as, quote, the French state, unquote. Apparently, even the outward forms of the French Republic have been scrapped in the transition from a democracy to a totalitarian state. This is Edwin Hartridge, returning now to Columbia in New York.
That was Edwin Hartridge reporting from the German capital. And now, from Berlin, we take you to Rome, where Cecil Brown is ready to report. Go ahead, Rome.
This is Rome. The Italian High Command has just announced that bitter fighting is taking place in British Samoa there. The Italians are making continuous use of their air force to attack British columns and outposts resisting the advance. The fascists claim they have taken prisoners and captured some guns. That's the extent of the High Command's report on the operation. But it's apparent the attack still going on is the biggest offensive launched by the Italian forces since this country entered the war. And from fascist communiques, it is meeting with the strongest resistance. The immediate object of the fascist forces is Berbera, and the flight fighting is going on in the scrub-covered mountain passes north of Anta Gray. This town is about 60 miles southeast of Berber. Another province has been at Ceylon on the Red Sea, and its advance will be the easiest so far as the property is concerned. The road extends along the Gulf of Aden to Berber. This is just across the frontier from Djibouti, the British possession which divides Italian Eritrea and British Somaliland. You may remember that under the Franco-Italian armistice terms, Italy has the right to use the port of Djibouti and the Addis Ababa Djibouti Railway. The fascist press now directly accuses Greece of being in a plot, not only against Albania and Italy, but also against the Balkan Order. The press campaign against the Athens government is in full swing over the killing of Dot Kogia. He is described here as an Albanian patriot. The Greeks contend he was a bandit with a price on his head. So far as is known, Rome has, as yet, made no official demands on Greece. The papers, however, reproduce broken reports that Greece has two means of settling the controversy. One is for Athens to cede to Albania the province of Chiomoria. Such a move would pretty well wipe out the importance of Corfu. Greek island of Corfu, you know, dominates one side of the Straits of Otranto, at the entrance to the Adriatic Sea. And the other method, suggested by the Balkan press, is for Greece to renounce the British guarantee of protection. According to reports coming here, Premier Metaxas of Greece conferred with the Italian and German ministers to Athens. The Greek minister to Ankara saw the Turkish prime minister. It said he wanted to find out if the Turkish-Greek pact was valid in the present circumstances. The Greek minister to Russia saw Foreign Affairs Commissar Muratov. It's reported he asked Russia to intervene with Bulgaria to prevent King Boris from also jumping at Greece to get an outlet on the Aegean Sea. Bulgaria for years has been agitating for a corridor through eastern Greece that would put her on the Mediterranean. Today is Ferragosto in Italy, and for every Italian that means a day of rest and fun. Rome is deserted, sweltering in a burning sun. Almost everyone has gone to the beach of Ostia, 18 miles away, to swim in the Tyrrhenian Sea, or to the famous spas and watering places nearby. There are no holiday traffic problems on the highways here. Only a very small percentage of drivers have permits to use their cars. And even those with permits cannot drive them for pleasure, so the roads are deserted too. Ferragosto, like Easter and Christmas, is a day of gift-giving. Gifts go to the maid, the portiere at your apartment, the barber, messenger and delivery boys, and anyone who has served you in the past year, or at least in Easter. But Mussolini gave a present to the people, too. He relaxed the rationing restrictions. And so today, meat is sold and we can have ice cream. The bombing of Milan and Turin early yesterday morning has forced a tightening up of anti-air raid precautions. The papers only say that the British planes came from Switzerland. The papers printed the text of the leaflets dropped over the cities. The manifesto said the Italians were the vassals of Hitler, and they were in the war to help only Germany and not themselves. The papers reported to this that fascism and Italy are one and the same, and that the Italians know why they are in the war. It is, the papers say, to break Britain's power. This is Cecil Brown in Rome, returning you to CBS in New York.
That was Cecil Brown speaking to you from Rome, and here is another dispatch we have just received from that same point. Italy accuses Greece of being a tool of Great Britain in a plot to disturb the peace of southeastern Europe, and the fascists promise a strong Italian answer in the event it is confirmed that British warships are based on Greek territory. And with these reports by Cecil Brown from Rome and our correspondents in London and Berlin, they have reported the latest European developments by Transatlantic Shortwave Radio. Tony Marvin speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.